Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Roker Report podcast in association with Vaux Brewery. I am your host, Alex, and I am here to spread the good news that once again Sunderland have won and kept a clean sheet in the process, beating Bristol Rovers by 3-0. 3 goals coming in a flurry after the aforementioned side we played against got reduced to 10 men, but we'll get into that in good time. I'm your host, Alex. Okay, thanks, Gav. Anyway, spoiling your own intro there. I'm joined by Gav. How you doing, Gav?
Dossas is the word of the day.
Yeah?
The weekend.
And I'm also joined by Tom. How you doing, Tom?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, the thing about if you were fine or not.
Yeah. I was distracted by his eyes. He makes quite intense eye contact as Alex gets to me.
Shall I apologise?
No, just look the other way, please.
Okay. Thanks. And I'm also joined by Johnny Robb. How you doing, Johnny?
I'm very well, thanks.
Good stuff.
Very good stuff.
Yeah.
I'd also like you to put some sunglasses on.
Thanks.
So sweat for the eye contact.
Honestly, I'm getting really self-conscious here now, boys. Really getting me down this. Anyway, so before we get into the Sunderland game itself, we will mention the result garnered by the Sunderland ladies team, who in the recent Weir Tees derby beat the Borough women 6-1, an emphatic victory which ensures the ladies bounced back from their cup defeat at the hands of Birmingham. And it's also great to see that Kira Ramshaw made her 200th appearance for the club, so well done to her. It's always good to see a derby victory, no matter who it is or who you're playing against. You know, a derby victory is a derby victory. We are very thankful to have seen this one. So let's get into the Bristol Rovers game itself. I'm going to have to open my phone again because I've just locked the email, which has 3-word reviews on. Yeah, so 3-word review from the Bristol Rovers game. We have Adam Lyle, who says patience and quality. Carter McDonald says Tom Flans Beckenbauer. Kenzie Wooten says assist King Maguire. Alex Catcherside says promotion party pending. Kenny Armstrong says return of Aline. Andy Atch says starting to believe. Callum Lawson says absolutely effing class. Andrew Lee says being proved wrong. Michael Cowell says more bins needed. And David Harwood says must improve more. So I'll stop talking now because I've talked far too much. Let's get into the actual discussion of the game itself. So we'll start with you, Gav. What did you make of that game? Give me your overall thoughts.
To be honest, all I can think about is the rubbish on the pitch after that 3-word review there.
That's classic you, isn't it?
It was bad yesterday. That's the worst thing that happened yesterday. The rubbish. People need to take it home with them.
Yeah.
No, the game was pretty professional, I thought. I thought first half, we dominated without really causing too many problems for the goalkeeper. It was quite irritating that we saw so much of the ball down the sides, created quite a lot of chances, yet never really had that many shots on goal. And when it got to about the 65th minute, I turned to my mate and I said, we're not scoring today. It just felt like one of them games where you do everything but get shots away. 09 had a great header towards the end of the first half, which if he'd scored it probably would have been the best header I've ever seen, because he jumped like Ronaldo slash Mark
Poom. He was like a salmon,
yeah,
wasn't he?
It was like Mark Poom against Derby. We also had a couple of half chances, like White backheeling one, which was quite, you know, decent, to be fair. I was expecting to see it. Cross comes in from Maguire, he sort of dinks it to him and he just backheels it at the keeper, nearly went in. But then in the second half it sort of continued along that line. When they got a player sent off to change the game, I felt that, to be honest, although they were still in the game to that point, they weren't great. Bristol Rovers, I actually, before the game, expected them to give us a little bit more of a difficult challenge and thought Johnson Clark-Harris was the danger man in the team, but he was really tame, like he has been pretty much every time he's played.
Yeah, I was going to say, every time we've played Bristol Rovers, there's always been someone who said, oh, we've got to watch out for Johnson Clark-Harris. You know, he can be a real menace if he's not kept in check. And every single time he
scored against us for Coventry last season, but we'll not count that.
No.
To be honest, I think the nicest thing you can see about Bristol yesterday was they came for a draw, didn't they? They didn't come with any real attacking intent. No.
You could see the time. I mean, on like the 25th minute, they were time wasting. I think the ball was going out, and then the keeper was like sauntering into the sands to get the ball. Like they were playing absolutely for a draw. Like quite. I think that early on in the game, quite shamelessly for a draw, really. Yeah, like, yeah. There wasn't even an attempt.
Although when I listened to the preview podcast and the build-up, their fan said that, they'd be on such a bad run at the minute that they would have to maybe revert to a style of player that would get the odd point here and there. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really surprised. Like,
do you think we still would have scored, though, had they stuck with 11 men on the pitch?
I didn't think we were going to score. I turned to me and said that. I said we just don't look like scoring. We're doing everything but scoring. It felt for a while a bit like that game against Blackpool years ago, where we just like peppered them really, but we never sort of created anything meaningful. And to be fair, probably a minute before we scored the first goal, I think everybody in the ground was pretty much in agreement that Wyke and Gooch needed to come off. Even the manager did. He had Lafferty and Semenyo warming up, ready to come on. And the combine for the, I mean, White, who got the first goal?
Gooch got the first one.
Yeah. White set that away to Maguire, another great ball in. Second goal, a bit of fortune, to be fair. Like, their two defenders both went for the same ball and it put White through. I mean, that's the slowest I've seen anyone take a keeper on, but at least he's done it. But let's say to that point, I was like frustrated by the pair of them. I just thought, like, that. Haven't played well at all.
I think I've seen Laurie's turn Testo's roundabout quicker than I saw Charlie White turn that keeper mind. It was absolutely brilliant. Like,
what's the keeper doing? He comes absolutely blaring out, then just stops on the edge of the box where his hands are useless.
Yeah.
I was thinking, what's he doing? And then by that point, all White had to do was knock it around him. He was either getting fouled or he was going to score. Mm-hmm. And this is a goalkeeper who we were told in the build up of the game is above League One. Jamal Blackman, he's meant to be a really good goalkeeper.
I didn't think anything of him. I know he didn't have a great deal to do, but like even his distribution and stuff, he was generally quite a poor keeper.
That's quite a baseline standard for a goalkeeper, though, isn't it? Like, you know,
be able to kick
ball a long way. You know, like it's sort of should really be on the tin, shouldn't it? Really, but no, I think you. Yeah, he's someone who's meant to be quite highly rated, but like watching sort of like Wyke bamboozle him at about 4 miles an hour was a sight to behold.
The fact you're being bamboozled by Charlie Wyke probably explains a lot.
Like. Well, that's the caliber of the division you're in, isn't it? Really, again, you know, we'll come back to that old saying, but
Wyke the bamboozler.
It's funny though, because for weeks and weeks and weeks, I think most fans have been like, "This is great that it's working, but I would like to see maybe Lafferty play," and then like. Wyke scores. It's like, it's not going to happen now.
Can't drop
him. He loves Charlie Wyke for whatever reason.
To be fair, that probably do a lot for his confidence, because I remember, I think it was the Blackpool game just before Christmas, or maybe the Burton game at home, where exactly the same chance, he went through one-on-one, and I said to my mate who I stand with, and I was like, he's not scoring this, no chance, and he didn't. And like, but like, obviously yesterday, you know, he did. He seemed pretty comfortable going around the keeper and knocking it in, you know. So I think it makes a big difference.
Well, nobody more than Sunderland fans wants to see him do well. So if that gives them some confidence between now and the end of the season, then great. I think the presence of these players has definitely kicked some of them up the arse. Yeah. So, you know, Lafferty just being there should be more than enough to push Wyke every day in training. And obviously, you know, when Lafferty's coming on, he's not showing a great deal, but he's not getting enough time to really show anything.
No, but I think Wyke will probably know that if Lafferty's given enough time and Wyke himself isn't improving, it might become apparent quite quickly that Lafferty is overall the better player. I mean, if you think of who Charlie Wyke's played with in his career, if you think of the clubs he's been at before us, he was at Carlisle for quite a while where he did well. Yeah. He was at Bradford for quite a while where he did well. I can't imagine, though I don't know the rosters of those teams in those respective seasons, I can't imagine that he's competed with many strikers of the same calibre as Kyle Lafferty, just based on reputation.
No chance.
So I think for him, really, and again, that's not to assume his mentality, but I think having someone like so have someone of like the name and reputation of Cal Lafferty come through the door, he's got to think, right, you know, if I don't pull my finger out and I don't, you know, start taking these games by the scruff of the neck, I am going to lose my place quite quickly. And, you know, I suppose fair play to him. He's doing, I would say, in my opinion, just enough to keep his place.
Yeah. Someone made a good point on Twitter. They said that his job in the team is to score goals, to be a foil for others. Mm-hmm. And although he played pretty poorly yesterday, he did both of those things. So he did his job in a sense.
To play devil's advocate, though, is when I watch Charlie Wake, as many other people do, I find him really frustrating. I don't think he brings overall that much to the side. Going into Tuesday, would you consider, just to throw it out there, would you consider just giving Lafferty an hour? And I know it would be harsh to drop Wake, but give him an hour, because I don't know, I just feel like if you you could get more out of Lafferty in an hour than you could get with Wake. But if you brought Wake on for sort of 20, 25 minutes or whatever, you would probably get more out of Wake, because he's not trying to last 90 minutes. He's just trying to last 20.
I don't know, is this the game to experiment though? If you look at the run to the end of the season now, Fleetwood, Gillingham and who's Coventry. The team we're playing? Coventry. That's the hardest run we've got coming. Yeah. So, and I've said this to a few people, although the logic somewhat baffles us. I mean, I can't get my head around how this is working in the way it is. Like, everything tells you that you should be making little tweaks, changes.
Yeah.
And then time again, he's picking results up. So why change it?
It feels like it's been weeks since, like that we've been saying, oh, there needs to be a change. There needs to be some sort of rotation. You know what I mean? But he hasn't. And I can't remember the last time that the team has been this consistent in terms of the lineup. You know, like... maybe since Allardyce, it's been...
I can't even remember how far back, actually, when you say that.
No, I would say Allardyce or Poyet in that season where he kept us up.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to be that, like, a manager every game was trying to find the right lineup and just hoping he would strike gold like with the right lineup. But, like, I don't know, it's unprecedented. Like, what it's been since Christmas. Credit, unreal. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Unreal.
Well, I was going to say, it's testament to how well Parkinson's done since Christmas, really, because... Even though everyone, you know, Wake's kind of the discussion of the moment at the minute, is whenever we're criticising, it's not a big critique. It is essentially nitpicking, isn't it? It's not, you know, it's like...
In the build-up of his goal yesterday, right, he'd done something really annoying. He backed into their defender instead of trying to win it. Do you remember? Yeah, it was about, I think it was about 30 seconds before... Was it his goal? Or the first goal?
The first goal was... Gooches.
It was either the first or second goal, I can't remember. The ball comes up really high on the halfway line and he purposely backs into their player, just trying to win a free kick and gave the free kick away, I think. It was just really frustrating.
Loves a bit of that, though.
Yeah,
always.
I wish he wouldn't focus so much on doing that. He's a better player than that. You know, just use your... He's like Connor Wickham to me. I said this the other week. He just reminds me of Connor Wickham. Connor Wickham used to do the same thing. I used to think, you're so big and you're so athletic. Use your body, to your advantage. Stop trying to win daft free kicks. And I don't know whether he's been taught to play like that.
Like Charlie Wake is just like our League One Connor Wickham, isn't he? Like he's the big sort of like alleged target man who, as you say, often opts to try and, you know, put together moves by, you know, using strategies that a target man wouldn't make, like backed into defenders trying to win free kicks.
He was on the goal though. That he set away for Gooch. Mm-hmm. The first time passing to Maguire. I mean, that's perfect hold-up play.
I'm inclined to agree with Tom, though, to be honest with what you said earlier about starting Lafferty. I know it's not a game to experiment, but I think the word experiment implies that you're trying something unorthodox, and I think that on the balance of it, even though we haven't seen him that much, just from what I have seen overall, I think you can't really do any worse for a target man with Charlie Wake than Cal Lafferty would be. Mm. I think if you put him out there for the first hour at least, I think you would genuinely see like he'd perform the target man role, I think, more effectively. He's a much bigger presence. Every time the ball's been hit up to him when he's come on, he's looked like a lot more of a viable target than Wake's been. You know, he doesn't get pushed over by defenders. He's, I would say, as mobile, but that's perhaps owing to his fitness. You know, his finishing still... We still need to really see him have like a clear cut chance, really. But
from a man management point of view, I don't think dropping a striker who's just scored is a great idea.
Oh, no, I mean...
I don't think you will.
I mean, it's entirely hypothetical. I don't think it'll happen because, again, as you say, I just think it's totally... It's just like a logical fallacy, isn't it, that to drop a striker who's just scored? And I think from a management point of view, definitely, yeah, it's just not a thing that you ever really do. So White will start because Parky absolutely loves him. Like,
I think it, as well, is White seems that his confidence can be quite fragile, especially when you see him. He's a different player, like I say all the time. He's a different player from once he scored to before he scored. And sometimes he needs little things to go his way. Like, it sounds really stupid to say this, but just before half time yesterday, I don't know if anyone else noticed it, big ball just ballooned into the air and it went out. It was about 5 yards off the pitch, but White just watched it, and from about 40 foot in the air, he just brought it down and it just glued to his foot. It was the best touch I've ever seen Charlie White make. And that was after a really poor first half from him. He come out second half, he was a far better player in the second half. So I don't know, is that what Parkinson's seen in the dressing room? But little things, like he must just be sat there thinking, fucking hell, I brought that ball down. Like, you know what I mean? Just like it was no bother. It was like Ronaldinho kind of touch. And then he's come out second half.
You just compared Charlie White to Ronaldinho.
He is the white Ronaldinho. Obviously a lot less hair, but another trip to Turkey, he'll probably be all right. He'll probably be close.
Give him a few more commutes over there and he'll be all right.
Did you notice the advert going around the pitch for hair transplants?
It
said affordable hair transplants between 1,800 and 3,500. I mean, who's that affordable to?
Charlie White.
Charlie White's wage probably that.
Those adverts are targeted at the players, aren't they? Just catching them off guard for a moment, like, oh, I could do with one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
That ball
was at the play, go and chase it. Oh, hang on. That's something I can do with.
Yeah. Go on, Alex.
Go on then, right?
You fell asleep there, didn't you?
I did. Honestly, I'm shattered. I mean, I've got no excuse because you obviously used to watch the Wilder Fury fight, but yeah, no, I'm also tired, but not to the point where I can complain given how little sleep you've had. But yeah, so we'll go to you, Tom. Haven't had any views from you as a forerunner for this. So what did you... I'm staring at you again.
This is intense, but
yeah,
I like it.
Yeah.
Just on the staring thing before to butt in, this little seating scenario is great, isn't it? Each other.
It's wonderful, yeah.
It's not like being at the uni where the screens are in the way. We can all see each other.
We're actually just now realising that those screens are the only thing stopping me from making the room really uncomfortable every time I'm hosting it.
It's sexy, but it's not too sexy.
Yeah, it strikes a nice balance. I'm glad you feel that way, Tom. Really bodes well. But yeah, no, so what did you make of the game as a whole? Who were your standout performers, Tom?
First half, I don't think anyone was a real standout apart from George Dobson. He's really grown into his role as a Sunderland player. I was quite looking forward to him when we signed him. And to be honest, between the summer and right up to January, I thought he was fairly disappointing. But he was standout, and I think him and Power, generally over the 90 minutes, control the game really well, and it's not the first time they've done it. They've struck up a good partnership, and I think you notice Dobson maybe a little bit more. Dobson's a bit more, I don't know, he's just a bit more intense, I feel. He gets on the ball a bit more, he's looking a bit more to do with it, whereas Power's more of a, you know, he's more of a general, he's dictating play a bit more. So again, I was impressed with those two. Thought Ozturk was fine, but not for the first time in the past few weeks, really impressed with Tom Flanagan, and I really didn't think I'd be seeing that.
Well, didn't he?
But he looks way more comfortable in the back three, definitely, especially on the left hand side. Yeah, as well. He looks more comfortable on his left than his
doing
right.
the sweeping up job. I love that. Like, you're watching him before in a two, struggling to hold position and be disciplined, whereas in this, he's got a little bit more freedom to fly out and win, you know,
I think
win loose balls.
He's definitely a confidence player as well. You know, like, you look at, like, towards like the back end of last season, or like when he got dropped, and he was just, you could see his confidence was shattered, and he just it's like you say, playing in a back five, it far suits him compared to sort of playing in back four. And I think he's got a really good eye for a ball as well, for a pass forward. Now and then he'll just thread like the odd ball, and like, sometimes it doesn't come off, but sometimes it does. And I think he's a total confidence player. Like,
yeah, I think we've hit the sweet spot really with how to play Flanagan in our team. As we said earlier, or as you've just said there, like with the back two, when, for example, it was Flanagan and Baldwin, you know, I think that really, that very sort of like, you know,
fragmented partnership sort of came to a head and culminated in that Coventry game when we lost 5-4. And really, you know, I say it every time that game is brought up, but the 5-4 is probably a scoreline that flatters us and hides a lot of the defenders' blushes, because you could easily have not scored the four that we did score, because a lot of them were quite fluky. And if that game ended 5-0, you know, it would have been quite a justified scoreline. And that sort of highlighted just how difficult Tom Flanagan found working in as part of like a centre-back pairing with just two centre-backs. Because one, as you say there, Gav, his positioning just goes a bit off when he's not got that much cover. And when his only other partner in that sort of defensive shape was Jack Baldwin, who I think's level of confidence and sort of...
And a similar type of defender.
It was very similar. And I think the entire experience of playing your first season in such like a big home stadium, I think was quite daunting for the both of them. And I think that sort of showed in games like that. Equally, to go to the far side of that, when Flanagan's played as a fullback, irrespective of what the centre-backs look like, I think he's looked a bit too awkward to play as a fullback necessarily. Yeah. I don't know, again, that might just be because, you know, he's quite like a long, like lanky lad, and he sort of doesn't really like move with the sort of like grace that like a smaller fullback does when they're getting forward and playing as more of a wing back as we've seen in that like back five. But it's never really suited Flanagan that well. I think he plays a lot more as, you know, as a more of like a no nonsense sort of like defender who's sweeping up the danger, not sort of like dealt with by your Willis and your Ozturk. But
he's quite an unconventional player, is what I would say. He looks awkward, but actually when you take him on face value of, does he tackle well? Mm-hmm. Is he winning headers? Is he playing the right passes? He does all the things as well as anyone else. But I think that back three that he's got of the centre-backs is actually working really well, because mm-hmm. you've also seen the best of Willis out of that, because Willis has been allowed again to use his pace going forward, you know, get involved, get a lot of ball time as well. And then it doesn't matter really who you play in the middle. Like, I know we had the Ozturk argument this week, whether it's Ozturk, whether it's Lynch, who hopefully after his concussion now thinks he's fucking Maldini or someone. But like, crikey, it doesn't matter who you put in that middle, everyone's role's quite defined, but it brings out the best in everyone. So for me, Ozturk's probably our least cultured on the ball, but because mm-hmm. he's in the middle, he doesn't need to be on the ball.
No.
He doesn't need to be running fast. He just needs to win headers and win tackles, which is what he does.
Quite a variety of skills there, isn't there, across the back three?
It is, really.
It complements itself, you know, it balances itself out quite nicely. You've got left footer on the left, right footer on the right, and then you've got that organisation from the guy in the middle.
Don't forget Smith as well, who's just come in.
Uh-huh. When you peel back the layers a bit of Parkinson's sort of like defensive blueprint, it is quite like tactically complex when you get down to it. I mean, you're not just, if you think of like, I think Jack Ross fancied himself more as the more sort of like defensively conservative manager of the two that we've had here. And I know Parkinson again plays a lot more of a meat and potatoes kind of football, but I think Jack Ross was the manager who sort of saw himself as making a more sort of like conservative, intricate style of football. But when you break it down in that first season, you know, he played a flat back four. There was not much to it, and it got found out by teams who tried something different, you know, such as Coventry, who they had the two very pacey, very strong inside forwards, and they carved through like a hot knife through butter, because, you know, on the surface of it, it was just a flat back four, and there was nothing really to it that made it anything more than what it was at its most fundamental level. But then when you look at, say, the 5-3-2 that Parkinson's got now, as we said there, you've got Flanagan, who's easy left footer. You know, he times his tackles really well. He can bring the ball out. He plays as a more of the conventional centre-back with a sort of like unconventional ability to get the ball forward when he needs to. Willis on the other side, he can move over and support the wing back because he's quick, and he can time his tackles well again. And then Ozturk in the middle, who's probably, when Lynch isn't here, he'll be like the most sort of like physically present of the three overall. But because he's, you know, the flimsiest with his feet, he does the no-nonsense job of just ball comes in, get it out, you know, hoof it up, head it out. Doesn't matter. Other two will compensate with more technical expertise. It's quite good. It's quite good to watch.
Willis has just come on so much.
Oh, he's fantastic.
He's like, unreal. I mean, has he lost a 1v1 when he's chasing the ball down? He never seems to lose in that situation.
There was a few occasions yesterday I noticed as well. Their winger was getting a 2-3 yard head start, and his legs are going like the clappers. Yeah. And Willis just seems to glide over there. Yeah. Players are getting 3-4 yard head starts, and he's still beating them to the ball by 2 or 3 yards.
He's not a League One player, is he?
No. Having a defender that's like as athletic as him is just an absolute revelation. You know,
I mean, we do give the recruitment team a lot of stick collectively as fans. But that was a brilliant sign in that on a free transfer.
Oh, you've pulled an absolute blinder, haven't you?
Because he's a championship player in every sense.
Yeah. I just want to flag up one thing though that you said, Alex, and I might be being a picky here, but you said Parkinson's football's a bit like meat and potatoes, and I think that's a little bit harsh on Parkinson.
Possibly.
Just in the sense that some of the football we played yesterday and some of the football we've played since Christmas has been actually some really nice football to watch. I know Parkinson's got this. He's very defensive. It's long ball. It's this, that, and the other. And yeah, we do play long ball, but it's to clear the lines when the lines need
to
clear.
I don't think we do.
Meat and potatoes insofar as, you know, he doesn't make out like someone is reinventing the wheel. You know, he sort of like, he puts together a side that looks like quite a conventional lineup, but then when you get into it, it's actually very complex. Yes, and I think he plays a lot down of what he's doing, you know.
Because some of the football we play, and I was saying this the other week to someone, is we play some of the best football I've seen anyone in the division play at the moment. And it is football. It's on the floor. It's, you know, there's moments like yesterday, it was second half, Power was just sort of hovering 10 yards in front of the halfway line in the middle, and he was just passing it sideways, 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 just until they were completely stretched. And I think that was not long before O'Neill scored the third. Mm-hmm. They were just completely stretched.
Why do you think Parkinson's five at the back's working and Jack Ross's didn't? Do you think it's
Ross's was too? I don't think
personnel.
I don't think it was his. I don't think he gave it enough time for a start.
Right.
I mean, if you think back to when he implemented it, the first game of pre-season was against South Shields, who are a Northern Premier League team, right? Yeah. We played three at the back and it looked good, but you can't take anything from that. It's the first game of pre-season. Then I think we only played another three pre-season games in which we played that formation in every game. Mm-hmm. We just didn't give it enough time. We didn't have enough. Pre-season was a shambles this year. Mm-hmm. I put that down to why we started so badly under Ross. We didn't play enough games. The level of opposition maybe wasn't right. I mean, when like I say, you've only played four games and one of them's a Northern Premier League team. It's not good enough. You need to give yourself the best possible chance for the start of the season. And that's maybe why it didn't work so much. But on top of that, Ross played players like Conor McLaughlin and stuck by him quite a bit when it was clear he wasn't good enough to play wing back.
Didn't he have Flanagan as the centre point of the three at some point as well?
I think he did.
That was another big reason why he
was playing Leadbitter as well, who can't play in a two. He's not quick enough anymore. I mean, it wasn't well thought out, and I don't think what we're seeing now resembles anything like that. I mean, he's since Parkinson's come in, he's placed complete faith in Hume to the point where Declan John doesn't even make it onto the bench. He obviously sees Hume as somebody who can really grow with the team, so you stick with him as opposed to bringing in a lone player in his place and maybe stunting his development. What he's doing is he's letting Hume. I'm saying this, he hasn't had any. He doesn't play badly. He has average games. I can't remember Denver Hume ever playing badly recently. I just think
recently,
maybe his creative output's definitely dropped off, but he doesn't have bad games, and I think that's a testament again to Parkinson, who has stuck with him. And then on the other side, he's showed the same sort of faith in Luke O'Neill, who for my money is a championship player playing right wing back. I think he is a right wing back. I think everything he can play a number of positions, but everything he does as a right wing back is just ideal. He's got the work rate, he's got the tenacity going forward, good in the tackle, organised, talks, takes on criticism and you know, stuff from the likes of Willis. I mean, you see Willis talking to him all the time. It's just, I think that is the key to this system. And also, on top of that, he's not playing without no wingers. He's put basically two lads to play as strikers off Wyke, which is sort of why I can see why Wyke plays so much. He is basically just a decoy, you're a pivot for the others.
I thought that was the crack with Madger last season. You know, like, Gooch was so sort of successful early on last season because defenders were so concerned about Josh Madger and him pulling defenders away. And it's almost similar now with Wyke. Like, he's engineering these sort of situations where it's given Maguire and Gooch just loads of space and loads of chances because he's pulling defenders away.
What was the game when Gooch scored twice? I can't remember who. What we just seem to be winning 3-0 for him every week.
Was it Rochdale? It was two from Gooch and one from O'Neill.
If there was a really good goal which I think Gooch finished off, where the football and the build-up was outstanding. Mm-hmm. And it was all, if you watch, Gooch just drifts in, nobody's watching him. Everyone's occupied by Wyke.
I guess
I can see the merit in playing him. I'm not to go back to the Wyke debate, but I think that's why this system works.
Yeah.
Because it's basically built around getting the best out of Maguire and Gooch.
Yeah.
Who again, Maguire, another 2 assists yesterday.
Well, that's a big thing I'll bring up now, and this is a big talking point. In the last 12 games, Lyndon Gooch and Chris Maguire have scored 12 goals and contributed 10 assists. And that's, 12 games, 12 goals and 10 assists from those two players. And so, obviously, the impact they're having is to say it's substantial.
I think it's testament to how good we are at creating the overload. It kind of goes unnoticed. Maybe I'm being a bit football hipster here. But you see at times during the game, and especially yesterday, we get the stat packages as well, and you can see the average positions of players sort of over the 90 minutes. And what you find is, and it'll happen multiple times during a game, is we'll have three players overloading the right-hand side, and it happens quite a lot, especially with Onai and Maguire and Willis.
And Dobson, actually.
And and sometimes four. There's always someone kind of coming into that area, and we do it on the left as well. And I think at this level especially, it just bamboozles teams because, especially with a target man in the middle, the two centre-backs are really hesitant to come out towards the ball. The strikers don't want to know. They're not interested in tracking back. So then immediately you've got the left back who's panicking because he's got two men, the left winger who's panicking because he's not a defender. Mm-hmm. And we just seem to pass around teams when we're getting those wide positions.
When you're talking about meat and potato football, League One teams are generally used to defending against that.
Yeah.
So when you come up with something, and it's not particularly revolutionary, but when you've got somebody like Jordan Willis who can effectively play like a right wing back, mm-hmm. which is what he's doing. He's flying down the wing and he's putting great crosses in the box. How do you defend that? It's difficult. I mean, the Rochdale game that we mentioned before, that one in particular, we absolutely battered their left-hand side to the point where the left-back came off.
I reckon, not to defend them, but they self-sabotaged from the get-go because, they got a lot of plaudits from the football Bible from that one video where they pass out from the back and score one goal. And I think that's one thing that Brian Barry Murphy tries to do with Rochdale is play out from the back. But again, when you're away from home on what is, I think, for League One, quite a wide pitch against a team that, is probably known among managers for, as you say, for sort of, overloading a flank and then garnering momentum from scoring 2-3 goals in quick succession. If they tried what they did the whole game and we had not relented, we would have won about 12-0. Because they were that bad.
How do you defend against Sunderland then? Because you've just said that and you're right. You can't play football against us in this system.
No.
But then yesterday, it was total route one and they were undone again.
I think the simplest way to defend against us and, football manager hat on is you've got to have a back five. I think you've definitely got to have a back five. That back five's got to sit pretty deep. We do use... I know sort of it doesn't look like it, but the pace and the dribbling skills are Gooch and Hume get teams on the back foot, and I think teams just need to sit back, then pat the midfield out and pat the defence out and just play for a nil-nil.
Well, that's it though,
but that's exactly what Doncaster did in effect. They played back.
There's two games I remember.
And the stifled us. I still feel we should have won that game. I thought we were the better side. But defensively, they were the most effective side against us.
I think putting a third man in midfield undoes us. Portsmouth and... what was the game the other week where Oxford... Portsmouth and Oxford both went with a midfield three against us in both games. That's the only time where we've looked not in total control of a game in both those. And we obviously, Partington recognised it quite early in the Oxford game and he brought Scowen on to try and counter it because Brannigan was getting a lot of the ball. So for me, we've just got to be guarded against that. I don't know how Fleetwood play, but on Tuesday, we've got to really hope that we set up in a manner that benefits us rather than them. Yeah. I know it sounds pretty simplistic, but these are a good side and it's the hardest game we're going to have, to my mind, unless somebody picks up in form. These and Coventry are the two hardest teams we've got left to play.
Well, that's it. When you're at the top end of this league, you're competing against teams who are obviously pushing for the division above and are therefore pushing for a system that doesn't depend on, say, a flat back 4-4-2 conventional players playing conventional football. You know, that we're at a point now where the teams here at the top are defined by either individual quality that allows for more sort of, you know, creative tactics and managers who have a real sort of footballing brain for stuff like this. And, you know, in Phil Parkinson and the Sunderland team we've got now, I'm now at a point where as of the 23rd of February 2020, that Parkinson and Sunderland, you know, have got that team. The main way that we approach games, and I think what you and Tom have said, Gav, is absolutely spot on. We overload the flanks, and that's one thing that both Ross and Parkinson have done well, is that a lot of our football is played from either the left or the right flank, and normally one is prioritised over the other with the aim of just overloading a team. You know, you can get Willis forward. You've got say like Gooch. Let's say you've got Gooch, Hume, and Willis, or Gooch, Hume, and Flanagan, all sort of like orchestrating an attack via that flank. You know, from the back going forward, that does overcommit, and I think teams in this league, they don't have the composure or the technical skill to sort of manoeuvre away from us and then exploit the weakness that we're leaving at the back there. Because obviously, if you're getting a centre-back forward, your three becomes a two. And also, you've committed to two midfielders and probably a... So you've committed your two wingers and wing-back and then a midfielder who's probably over that side as well, like Power or Dobson. You know, it's like any system, it's exploitable. But I think in this league, we depend quite massively and quite rightly on teams not being good enough to sort of get past that wave of panic that sets in when Gooch and Hume are steaming towards them. Anyway, I'm going to move on because we've got a competition announcement, and I'm also going to remind Gav that you forgot my shirt once again that you promised me.
Sorry, mate.
It's all right. But anyway, that's not, now that we've resolved that.
Competition time. Is, to be honest.
Yeah, it's somewhere. I mean, it's been about 3 months now. Like, I'm prepared to put that one down as a lost cause.
Play footy on Thursday. I might remember it. Bring it.
I thought it was Wednesday.
Well, Wednesday then?
The dog's got it. Anybody that dog's got it. The dog has shagged your top.
Well, you see, if you didn't give it so much snake bite, it might not. No. Might not be so unruly, but you know, that's a story for another day. I'm not going to implicate Gav right here on the pod. Anyway, earlier this week, our friends at Flatback 4 offered one of our listeners a free Stoke Goal bubble hat, and after hundreds of entrants, I am pleased to announce the winner was the Twitter user by the handle of HCSEFC. So please DM the Roker Report podcast with your contact details and head over to www.flatback4.co.uk to check out their full range of Sunderland-inspired products, which are available in abundance. So yeah, that's something.
In abundance?
Yeah.
In fairness.
Buy thousands if you want.
In a little lad, I've got one of the jumpers, and the jumpers are absolutely spot on. In fairness, like
well, I'm also meant to have one of the t-shirts. I think of a very similar style to the jumper you've mentioned there. But of course, Gav's snake bitten dog has tore it to bits. So you know, it's. Anyway, so we've got some questions from the listeners, and I think this is quite a big one. You know, speaking of Thompson, that we're nitpicking problems earlier. This I think is a fine example of how we're doing that, given how well things are going. But Wayne Johnson asks, any concerns? No, sorry, that's the wrong one. That's the wrong one, is it? Yep, sorry. Yep. Someone by the Twitter handle of Safalad asks, can we please ask people by email or in the program to keep their rubbish on them till they leave the ground in their bags or pockets, as there is no need for all the rubbish on the pitch during the match?
It's true, though. Like, it is rank, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's horrible. It's horrible. And obviously, because it's been windy for about 2 months, it just makes it worse, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's rank. And obviously, when you see it on the highlights and stuff.
How does it a tornado of rubbish just swirling around Phil Parkinson?
It's because the Netflix cameras are no longer there, so the standards have just dropped off, you know. On Sunderland Till I Die season one, you would never see like a tornado with Watsits bags circling Chris Coleman.
That's true, actually, isn't it?
The problem is, if people don't start taking the rubbish home, we're not that many weeks away from Greta Thunberg coming to a match and screaming at we're all at half time.
We don't need that. Like, we don't need any more bad publicity, really.
There was a photo going around Twitter around Christmas time when they do the Christmas parties for workplaces and stuff, and somebody had put it on. They got like a two hour in with the party. And they took them down to pitch side, and literally the tunnel was full of rubbish. Like, this was on a midweek. This wasn't even like went after a game. So they hadn't even cleaned it up. It's like standards, man. Yeah. Someone sent us a link yesterday on Twitter to this gadget some guys developed. It's like a leaf blower, but it picks up litter. And I tagged the club in it. I was like, buy some.
We need to invest, like, you know, you can sod your money on Liam Boyce. I want some of those leaf blower things.
The ball boys are useless anyways. Just give them one of them each.
Yeah.
I have noticed, though, the ball boys are now on the other side of the advertising boards.
I've seen Phil Parkinson tell one of them to hurry up yesterday as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, because at one point it was getting daft, and I noticed, I think it was maybe three or four games ago, the ball boys are now sitting on the inside of the, so they can actually get the ball quicker. Yeah. And it's genuinely making a difference. Like, so I wonder if Parky's had something to do with that.
Because we're playing at such a high tempo, you want the ball out quickly. You don't want to be farting on it. And we're pretty bad at retaining possession from throw-ins, generally speaking. So anything we can do to help ourselves, you know.
Well, that's it though, isn't it? Like, it sounds on the surface like a very trivial point, but at the end of the day, if you're a ball boy and you're letting the ball just fly over you and then waiting for the crowd to pick it back up, that's about 15 seconds of dead time.
Look at that Origi goal for Liverpool in the Champions League semis last year. Well, no, that was all the ball boy, really, wasn't it? Because he got the ball back on the pitch quickly.
To nip it in the bud, are we basically just saying to the fans, less rubbish, more throwing the football back quickly, please?
That's exactly what we're saying, yeah.
That's it.
Play your part.
And we'll win the league.
Yeah. Parkinson wants you.
It does show, though, how well things are going.
Pick up your litter. It's the most, like, the least threatening, like, propaganda you could ever have, isn't it?
It does show how well things are going, though, that we're complaining about the litter. But it is a problem. Like, I mean, it seems like such a stupid, nitpicky, minor thing.
Yeah, but what
it looks rank. I couldn't help but watch it. I was like, this is really irritating. Why is there so much rubbish?
I don't care about aesthetics here. I'm thinking about the actual problems it could cause. I mean, think about the beach ball incident. You know, what if we have, like, what if a trundle ball from Charlie White, once he's beaten another keeper, collides with some, like, sort of, like, encircling crisp packets and slows it down? Well, what if that happens?
Can you not remember Victor Moses for Wigan slipping over a crisp packet and getting a penalty?
Yes.
That's actually happened to us before.
That's it though. Like, I'm not. We can't take that chance. Like, we know our luck. We can't.
Imagine if that costs us promotion.
Carry up that, catch him on a Charlie Wake's head as us. Fucking Greggs.
Oh man, that's some thought. Charlie Wake flailing around as a family bag of prawn cocktail skips. Hey man, honestly.
If you get Brucey back as manager, it would be a better sort of image, wouldn't it?
He won't eat the packets, though, will he? Like,
how's the bacon, did you say?
That's so good. What did he actually ask him? Because, like, it didn't even sound like bacon at all.
I don't know.
It was like, do you want the game? How's the bacon, did you say?
He didn't even, like, take a second to... Like, did he just say that? It was just like straight out bacon.
Pure enthusiasm over bacon.
Threw down his water bottle and just like leaned right in.
The highlight though was the disappointment when he was like, no, and he went, oh. Oh.
So there's no bacon. Drinking his water bottle, doesn't listen for the rest of it.
I really want to talk about bacon and not how shit Newcastle United are.
Yeah.
Well, Steve. He writes books, doesn't he? Maybe we might get
paid. They actually sell for thousands, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're so rare.
They're so rare and presumably shit.
Yeah. I've not heard good things like...
They are like...
The protagonist is a man called Steve Barnes, so I'm told. So basically, you know, it's a book written that I believe... I think it's maybe like a fictitious retelling of Steve Bruce's life as a football player, but... I don't know. I'd like to know how he sort of spices it up. I'd like to know what he does to give it plot twists and interesting characters.
Got a spare couple of grand, Alex, get yourself one.
I don't. I really don't. It'd be nice to.
Haven't you just been skiing in Italy?
Yeah, but...
You big Tory. You've got loads of money.
Thanks for that, Gav. No, you admit it's political, didn't you?
I've actually got some extracts here from the book.
Please.
The novel called Sweeper.
Let's go. Sweeper? What is that, like...
He's got a trilogy. No, it's a part of a trilogy, obviously.
Trilogy?
Yes.
Crikey, didn't know that. I thought it was like one or two. I didn't know there was three. I went with Tom.
I can't believe this.
Come on.
The gun was level with my belly.
What?
So this was what it felt like to die. There was no doubt I was going to die. And not even in Newcastle. Not even in the Premier League.
You know?
In Halifax, of all places, with a club in the third division.
You know? Can I get the ear nose in?
These are awful,
Well.
I prepared and ate my breakfast. My mother always impressed on me, as a lad, the importance of a good breakfast.
I don't go
the full Monty. I can manage without the pork chop and black pudding.
Full Monty.
Pork chop has no place on a breakfast like OS, Steve, you absolute glutton. That is a disgrace.
But I like cereals, followed by bacon and eggs, and toast with marmalade.
Was it bacon, did you say?
Or washed down with tea. That's the kind of breakfast a man such as me needs.
Man, yeah.
I don't actually want to buy these books. That's fucking awful.
I feel like we've gotten enough like sort of comic relief just from reading those extracts. Spending money on that now would be a bit of disappointment. Because you know for a fine fact, it's just like let's say if there's 300 pages, about 280 is like dull, monotonous storytelling. And then like the other 20, you're just like really funny lines only because of the person Steve Bruce is, not because of what he intended. Like,
I just love how he talks about his breakfast. He clearly loves breakfast food, which we'll all do, to be fair.
This is actually just like, you know, like when you're a kid, you've got to like write a story of how like your day was. And it's like, well, I woke up, I had my bacon and eggs. It was very good. I then walked to school and that was good too. That's what Steve Bruce is doing.
Steve Bruce is Ron Swanson from Parks and Recreation. Yeah. Just loves his breakfast food.
Where did the gun come from though? I heard you say the word gun in there.
Yeah, I don't know. They were just extracts from the book, but I think it was to highlight how poorly written it was. Yeah.
What's this got to do about Sunderland? Like, what have I done here? Talking about Steve Bruce.
See, this is why Steve Bruce would never take back the Sunderland job. You know, the thought of the third division now will obviously remind him of his dice with death, you know.
Halifax.
Yeah, Halifax. Oh, not a chance.
Choking on a piece of bacon fat that he intended to digest.
Yeah, so I had my piece of bacon. I stood up, I dusted myself down, and I
just want to know who the fuck's having a pork chop for breakfast.
Steve Bruce. That's shocking about the winner. That's really appalling. A pork chop, aware.
Pork chop with breakfast.
I like a pork chop. But I don't think it's like,
obviously in the 90s, there's.
Isn't it?
When was the bleep test introduced? Because I presume it was after Steve Bruce's career.
Pre pork chop, obviously.
Yeah.
I know Dan James actually beat the bleep test. Apparently, the bleep test has an end.
Did
so
he?
There you go. Really? Yeah, it has a finish. That. Dan James beat the bleep test.
No way.
There's a little fact.
So, Wayne Johnson asks, any concerns that we didn't look like scoring until Bristol Rovers went down to 10 men? We'll go to you, Johnny, for that one. Is that a worry until Mr. Go?
I think it was, well, I was asking Gav before whether or not he thought would actually score. I think it was similar with the Ipswich game. You know, I think there was, because of the way we're playing and because things are going well, there's a lot more patience. Like from the crowd and stuff, you know, because there's that expectation there.
That's
there's the we seem to be a lot more patient, and it's like, well, you know, if it gets to the 60th, 70th minute, we still haven't scored. It's you know, we're not getting on people's backs because of a misplaced pass or whatever. So whether or not the sending off did make a difference or not, I still think we would have probably went on to score, you know, and went on to win the game. Absolutely, aye.
It, to be honest, prior to a go-go, great name, getting sent off, it did.
His first name's Abu as well, so Abu a go-go just flows, doesn't it?
Abu a go-go, it's a good name.
Wake me up, Abu a go-go.
Yeah.
Can we sign him?
Could do. Well, not right now because of the ban.
Trying to kill Chris Maguire in training.
It could happen, but no, I think when you look at it, really, I think more ridiculous things have happened than Bristol Rovers should they have stayed at 11 men. Seeing the game out 0-0, I think it could have happened. I don't personally think we looked like scoring, like convincingly, until that they got them sent off. I think there was a feeling that it could have been one of those days where it could have finished 0-0 despite all of the pressure. I don't think they would have scored in a million years. I think they could have still been playing now. You know, I think you could have had about 10 more go-goes on the pitch, and they wouldn't have tried to get the ball forward. They would have still tried to see the game out.
I've just got to, like I said before, I got to a point in the game where it wasn't because I'd lost faith in the players. It just felt like we were doing everything right apart from create meaningful chances. Hmm. So from that perspective, but I mean, Johnny made a great point there. I think we are a lot more patient with the ability of the players now. So you look at probably discounting away games. Maybe the data for away games is the same, but home games certainly we do seem to have a lot more energy in the tank than the teams we're playing. So, you know, as the game kicks on, that we've still got a chance of winning them.
And these teams, it's every away team's cup final in it at the end of the day, coming to the stadium alive.
They brought loads of fans yesterday. I was really surprised by how many had made the trip.
Right.
Great support considering the state of the weather and the fact they're not playing particularly well, the distance of the journey. I mean, practically in Wales, aren't you, in Bristol? So
you basically are, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like they've come a long way. Mm. And I reckon there was over 1,000 there, which is a good crowd for them. So you're right, everybody turns up at the Stadium of Light, and it's not big-headed in saying this, they generally do, they treat the game differently.
Yeah.
The referees treat the games differently. I mean, the referee yesterday got a bit of stick, actually didn't think he had a bad game, if I'm honest.
I thought it was awful first half.
I thought it was absolutely atrocious.
I mean, there was the big one that made everybody go wild at him at half-time was not giving a penalty to 09, which I don't think was a penalty. I mean, I was right in front of it. I don't think he touched 09.
When you look at the reverse angle for me, where do you sit?
southwest corner.
Ah, well, we had, well, the, like the camera angle from the like from the stream at the very least.
Yeah, I've seen it. It does look a bit more like a penalty.
It looks Stonewall from the angle, but obviously it might look different from the reverse. I mean, I can only account for one angle.
It looked Stonewall from where I was, and I sit like in line with the left hand goalpost.
I would like to submit, hopefully
Stonewall from
hopefully
there.
Some YouTube child has done some sort of
YouTube child.
Yeah, you know when
it's not a real phrase.
For me,
you know when they film the games and stuff.
Yeah,
there'll be some like raw camera footage of that incident. I'm sure.
For me though, he did have a couple in the first half. Why can referees not apply physics? It's like if you win the ball, chances are the ball is going to change direction. It's not going to continue on the same pace on the same line, right? So at that point, if he thinks that he's won the ball from 09, right? He's either got to, where the ball went, he's either got to give a penalty or he's got to give a free kick and book 09 for diving, which insinuates he hasn't won the ball. Hmm. But instead, he's given a corner and it's like, but the ball never deviated. How can you look at that and go, well, that's not changed, but I think he's won the ball.
Of the three possibilities he had, that was the only objectively wrong choice he could have made. Because the other two, from the looks of it, are both contentious. Like plausibly, you could have given either the other two, and while I may have disagreed with one, I would have seen, right, okay, I understand that that's the logical due process here.
Yes.
A corner doesn't make any sense.
He did the same with Gooch, though. When he booked Gooch, Gooch won the ball. The ball's completely changed direction, and then he's gone through the man. So he's won a fair tackle.
He'd made three fouls.
But it was a fair tackle, the one he actually booked him on.
I think he was lucky not to get booked before that.
He probably was, but the tackle he books him on, he's won the ball. The ball's changed direction. Mm. So how can you see him win the ball and go, well, that's a free kick? Yeah. Because he's won the ball and then through the man.
I've given up waiting for the referees to be consistent, even at this. I mean, when you watched the Premier League yesterday, with the benefit of a VAR replay and about 2 minutes to make a decision, they still got that stamp wrong in the Spurs game.
I feel like
it shows you how bad it must be down the leagues. Yeah. If that's the best we've got.
I feel like now I feel like promotion to the Championship is a lot more sort of appealing for us now, because I personally believe now that's where the best standard of refereeing in English football currently is. Because obviously in League One, we can verify that it's absolutely atrocious. And in the Premier League, while some of them may be more competent, they appear to be totally submissive to like the robot overlords of VAR. You know, like the referees now who just like hold on to them and just go, you know, oh no, this is the way the game's moving. You know, I must defer to the computer overlord here to tell me what's right and wrong. You know, to make my own moral choices on this game. You know, at least in the Championship. I mean, it won't be very good. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's probably the best we've got. You know, they'll be better than the League One referees, and they won't have any robots tell them what to do.
The refs are absolute dog shit in League One. But the only way for me, I think personally, is to get over it is just keep playing the way we're playing and win games, because then we're not having to rely on, you know, a referee to help us. Thankfully, touch wood, we haven't lost any points because of a terrible refereeing decision yet. But, you know, the whole time wasting thing, it's the same. You know, we can't use that as an excuse. It's just play our game, be better, and win.
Their manager came out after the game and slated the referee. Like, they really weren't happy.
But he was playing mind tricks before the game, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. Saying, like, oh, he needs to be strong-minded and stuff like that.
He conveniently forgot about, obviously, the potentially Stonewall penalty in the first half. He said, oh, the referee was great in the first half, but, oh, that one decision when Charlie Wax got, oh, no, that was terrible. He really wilted there. He only seemed to wilt, according to the manager, in the decisions that went against him, despite them being as contentious.
Which is the same across the board, mate, because there is times, and we're all guilty of it, where you're in the south stand and you see your tackle go in and he gives a free kick. Oh, it's not a free kick. And you know in your heart of hearts it really is. Yeah. But
I honestly think you had a good game.
But to be fair, I think across the board with the referees, though, is they're that incompetent that they're that incompetent across the board. So, for instance, the Agogo thing is, yes, he's got the red card right, but the same time, he's also just completely ignored the fact that Maguire's instigated that whole incident, you know, and there's little things like that. So even though the referees are poor, they are still getting...
They're consistently
mostly
poor.
Yeah, they're consistently poor, so they are still getting the obvious ones correct.
Yeah. No one gets favoured by the poor referees. They don't discriminate. Everyone gets done in by a bad decision at least once in a game, as it seems.
I just think the referees are just bred arseholes, to be honest with you. Because Is there a referee in the world, or in Britain rather, that you can go, oh, he's a good referee, and he's not an arsehole? Because there's not.
Mark Clattenburg.
He is definitely an arsehole, and he doesn't referee anymore.
No, he doesn't, yeah. You're right. And his surname is with Battenberg.
Funny. I just think that the fact we're a big team and playing a big stadium in front of lots of fans, it's got to have an impact on some of these refs who, to the point of the last couple of seasons, have probably only refereed in like front of 8,000, 10,000 people. It's like it's got to have some sort of impact.
Who was the referee last season? I don't know if you remember, I think we had 7 red cards last season, and 5 were brandished by the same referee.
Yeah.
And 4 were rescinded. And there was only one we didn't appeal, which was the Leuven's one. And we didn't appeal it because he tore his hamstring, so he was out for a month.
Yep.
So that referee could have realistically have had every red card he gave against us rescinded in one season.
Which is absolutely incredible.
How was that referee, after 2 red cards being rescinded, still refereeing our games?
It's the equivalent of like doing any other job, and then 4 times you need to maybe clean the floor, and then every single time you make the floor dirtier. So anyway, one last question from Tracy Slater, who says, Fleetwood on Tuesday night, they've beat the teams in 3rd, 5th and 7th in their last 3 and only conceded 1 goal. Would a draw be a good result? Tom?
No, it wouldn't be a good result.
What would be a good result, Tom?
To be honest, at home, on this form, got to be going for a win.
Absolutely.
It's as straightforward as that. Actually, I've probably been a bit harsh here. Would a draw be a bad result? No. But as long as we went and beat Coventry on Sunday.
I was about to say that, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's one of those. I think from the next 2 games, View says you can have 4 points. I'll take 4 points no matter what way they come. Whether that means drawing, then winning and drawing, I'm not bothered. But I do think we've got to try and chase the win on Tuesday, because then Coventry becomes a mustn't lose. As opposed to if we draw, it becomes a must win. And then that Coventry, play into Coventry's hands of, well, we can just sit out to frustrate these. And
yeah. I mean, Coventry have lost 3 games all season. You know, they're like the Jack Ross Sunderland team of last season, where they seem to be, if they're not going to win a game, they just draw it instead. That's all they do.
I'm just keeping my feet away from the power button.
I was quite impressed of how well you...
That was like Sharon Stone.
Yeah. You suspended them in the air very, very well there, actually, to be fair.
People can't see what's happening here, but Tom's just opened his legs very wide.
Tom's just like gyrating in a very sort of threatening way. Like,
it's because I've been falsely accused of kicking the power button on the computer.
It's quite sexually menacing.
Breaking the
actually.
Fourth wall, yeah. People know what's going on.
Whoopa.
Fleetwood. Gav tried to Fleetwood. Because his dog's an alcoholic.
Fleetwood. Anyway, it's Fleetwood. Yeah, I agree with what you said, actually. I think 4 points on the next 2 games would be fine. But... at the same time, I know this is such a cliche, but we've got to take it 1 game at a time. This next game is massive. I mean, Barton loves it, doesn't he? He loves playing Sunderland. They're going to be right up for it. And they're in great form. I think they're the only team in the league in better form than us right now.
Yep, that's right.
I think they've won 6 on the bounce now. So they aren't going to be no mugs. Clearly, losing Chet Evans for a couple of games to suspension hasn't made a difference, because they've kept winning. And they've beat Peterborough, they've beat Portsmouth, haven't they? So, I mean, these are clearly a good side.
They've beaten 2 teams who have beaten us quite convincingly in the past. Obviously, the Portsmouth game, they proved to be first best when we played them. And then obviously Peterborough, I mean, that was ages ago, but that was a very convincing win for them when we played them with Jack Ross.
This is a season-defining run of games. We've got, obviously, Fleetwood, Coventry and Gillingham, who
don't lose either.
Gillingham are in great form. They're another team who are an outside bet for the playoffs.
It's huge, like. But like you say, I think we do have to take it 1 game at a time.
Yeah.
But me heart says we'll come away with 3 points on Tuesday, but me head, I think it's going to be tight. I think they will come for a draw, maybe try and nick, you know.
I think they'll come for a win. Like, I think Barton loves it that much.
Yeah, because he'd love the opportunity. He'll not be telling his the big one.
Well, he'll not be telling his players to ease off us. They'll come with a game plan like everybody does, but they'll be coming for 3 points because they want to get promoted too. Mm-hmm. This is what we're getting into, that part of the season now, where when all the good sides start playing each other, it starts to make a difference. I've largely ignored the league table all season to this point, but this run of games is starting to make us think a bit more about it and thinking, you know, this is a massive game. Right. Massive game in terms of points. I mean, we could realistically be sat here this time next week, we could be top of the league. couldn't we?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it though, because that title and those automatic spots and those player spots are anyone's. If you look how tight it is at the top, like last season, I think this was round about where Luton and Barnsley were starting to pull away. Mm. Well, Luton especially was starting to pull away. There was a team that you thought, right, yeah, they're going to win it. Doesn't look that way now. I think Rotherham could slip. You know, Wickham are still around there. I don't quite know how, because I still think they're terrible. You know,
you're winning games. That's
yeah,
it, isn't it?
Well, yeah, Coventry don't lose games, and that does enough to ensure that when they don't lose, they just draw and they win the games that they need to win.
Yeah.
You know, there's obviously teams like us. Portsmouth have fell away, but again, they beat us. Fleetwood are knocking on the door. Gillingham are knocking on the door, because similar to Coventry, if they don't lose, they just draw. It's really, really tight. And those three games, you know, if you were to win those three games, and I know that's possibly a long shot, not implausible, not by a long shot, but if you won those three games, you know, you've possibly, and I know I don't want to jump the gun, you could have got your automatic spots just there, because you've won three must-win games. But again, like Johnny, like my heart says that it's going to be tight. I think in all three it's going to be tight. I don't think any of those teams are going to make it easy for us. I think we'll be pushed to the hilt in all three of them. But we'll finish off there. Can we get some predictions for the Fleetwood game? Can you give me the score line and your goal scores? We'll start with you, Johnny.
I'm going to go 2-0.
Nice.
Lafferty's going to start.
Oba.
And he's going to score first, and Gooch will get the second.
Yeah, so do you think that Parkinson will get sacked before that game then? Because that's the only logical way you're going to see someone jumping away. But
he might get injured in training between now and then. You never know. Could happen. Yeah. No.
Thanks for cursing it,
Johnny. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going with, 2-0.
Yeah. Decent. Tom?
I don't know. It's hard. I can't say he's keeping a clean sheet against Fleetwood. Fleetwood just seemed to get that knack.
Not really.
I just think Fleetwood have got that knack of managing to score in just about every game they're playing. And
yeah, we don't concede many chances, though.
We don't concede many chances, so it depends how clinical they are on the day. Like. I think 2-1 is, I wouldn't like to see who could score. I think Power's due an absolute screamer again, because it's been a while since he's been taking a few pops from outside the area, so I think he's fancying one. Probably Maguire or Gooch to get back on the score sheet.
Yeah, but just because they never offered these days.
I wouldn't say I can't see us getting beat off them, because anyone can beat anyone at the top of the division, but I would be very surprised if the result was any worse than a draw.
I'm going to go 1-0. I just think we'll win. Don't see us conceding, even though they're a good team. Mainly because we're just so good defensive. We don't concede chances. I mean, how many saves does McLaughlin actually make? Particularly at home. We don't concede that many chances. And I know they're a good team. And I've just been talking about how we can't take them for granted and they're in great form. But I think we are the team nobody wants to play right now, because we don't concede chances. We're winning games 3-0, 2-0. Like, people aren't going to want to play Sunderland. So as much as I know Barton will have his team up for it, it's a different kettle of fish when they get out on the pitch and they've got all those fans there, and we're confident and we're up for it and we're playing on the front foot, which we are at the minute. I mean, it was something I was going to mention earlier when you were talking about the style of play and stuff. But if you look at, in terms of possession and chances created, Sunderland are quite high in terms of the teams in League One. I don't think we get enough credit for the style of football we play.
No.
We do actually play quite good football, and I think at home that's crucial, because away from home you obviously set up a little bit more defensively. Mm-hmm. At home, again, as good as Fleetwood are, we've got to take the game to them like we have done in previous games against good sides. So yeah, I reckon 1-0, and I think Maguire, he's just in just such good form. I mean, he was so good at the weekend. He needs to carry that on, another good performance, get himself a goal, because if there's one thing you can be critical of on Saturday, was that his free kicks, he had some good free kicks around the box, chances to score, and they weren't great. I fancy him to bag one and then win us the game.
Yeah, no, same. I'm good. I would go with 2-1, because I think that while we have enough in the locker, we have the momentum and the quality to beat them. I'm with Tom that I think Fleetwood do just find a way to get a goal. I think I'd even go as far as to say that I think they'll score first. I think they'll start stronger than we will, and initially anyway, and they'll get an early goal. And then we'll get two back from Maguire. And I think, similar to you again, Gav, I think we'll get one from open play, because, you know, like our football on the ground, you know, has been some very decent football. Mm-hmm. You watch, I mean, when I watch like AFL on Quest, and I watch like some of like I watch the goal compilations of other teams in League One, and they all look a bit naff compared to ours sometimes. You know, when you, the Hume's goal against Wickham, Gooch's against well, I can't think of the name, Bristol Rovers yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was a great finish yesterday, but he's a lot. I know what you mean. We've got a lot more quality in a lot of teams.
We do, yeah. And I think we can pass our way to a goal from either Maguire or Rogic. I'm going to say Maguire for the first one, and then I think Maguire from a free kick, because law of averages, he's that good at taking them. If he gets a few more, I think he'll start putting them away. So, yeah, I'm going to go 2-1 Sunderland. So, yeah, I think that's a good place
wins
to leave
all
it.
Round, then.
Yeah, I think that's it. So, yeah, so thank you very much once again for listening to the Roker Report podcast. Almost compromised by Tom kicking Johnny's computer.
Didn't
there,
kick
but,
the computer.
Tom kicked the computer. Yeah, Johnny, did Tom kick your computer?
I'll have to review the CCTV footage.
Yeah,
and
well.
Just to let people
know, I didn't kick the computer, I'm going to fucking kick you.
Just to let people know what happened, because you can't see what's obviously happened, but we thought we lost 50-odd minutes of recording.
Yeah.
So...
It's Tom's Ari, got, man. Tom, yeah, we saved it.
Because yeah. Tom's got long legs and he's
long
big,
legs and
big toes.
And a bad, bad temper.
he was getting really angry about the rubbish on the pitch.
Yeah, and he was.
And they wouldn't let me read more Steve Bruce out.
Yeah. I want to read Steve Bruce. And then he kicks it and then we're gone. But no. So to make sure you get the latest Roker Report podcast as soon as they're released, remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Acast, Spotify, and of course, YouTube. So I've been your host, Alex. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Johnny, for lending us your studio.
No problem.
In spite of the controversy, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Deptford Sound. It's called Deptford Sound.
Deptford
if anyone wants to check it out on social media, et cetera, et cetera. Come and record some banging tunes.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Tremendous. Thank you. Thank you, Gav, for gracing us again with your presence.
No problem. I'm going to sleep soon.
Yeah. Well, make sure you get home first.
I mean, yeah. I don't want to do it at the wheel, no. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Johnny's been the hospitality's been great from Johnny, but I don't know it's going to accommodate you.
No.
Keep it on this sofa.
It is nice, this sofa.
It's very, very nice, this sofa, yeah.
Comfy. Bit of a casting couch vibe, actually. A
little bit, yeah. Wow, that's what I was thinking.
And he works in the music industry, actually. Now I'm putting two and two together.
Whoopa. Yeah.
This is where the sexy music comes in, Sean.
Yeah. Hashtag me too.
Sick. I would say thank you to Tom, but I'm becoming less and less thankful by the second, really.
He's ruined it.
It's no problem. I don't blame you.
Nah, it's all right. Anyway, so, Tom, if you can just get your trainer in ready and we'll cut off with you kicking the computer. So, yeah, thank you very much. And see you later. Tom, no!
Tell him sit down. Me humble. Sit down. Me humble. Sit down. Me humble. Sit down.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.